Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition. Providing a sounding board for mental health issues. And making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to share with your families and friends. You can catch us at Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show on the Mental Health News Radio Network. You can also Google us on Mainstream Mental Health Radio, as well as follow us on mainstreammentalhealth.org. Today we have an amazing show lineup for you. We have an expert in near-death experiences, in working with military, and with post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Diane Corcoran is a healthcare consultant. She specializes in healthcare technology, including smart card use in healthcare. She was director of medical services for a smart card company after retirement in 1992 from the military services. She served in the Army Nurse Corps for 25 years, starting in Vietnam and ending as the chief administration in Frankfurt Army Medical Center during Desert Storm. During the 25 years she served in the military, she held a variety of positions, from staff nurse to chief of education, special consultant to develop the force field force, and supervisor at a number of other positions. She served overseas and worked in a variety of different environments while serving in the U.S. She's published and presented on a variety of topics related to near-death experiences, something we're going to talk about today, and management and grief. And again, she's lectured for over 20 years on the importance of healthcare professionals understanding the near-death experience. Well, Doctor, thank you for coming on our show.
Glad to be here.
Well, it sounds like you are very diversified, and you are a PhD doctor in nurse management and psychology. And what kind of drove you into nursing in the first place? What was the push?
My mother was a nurse, and I think that probably had something to do with it. She used to take me to work with her occasionally, and I loved the, you know, ability to be able to help people. And so my path, I think, was set pretty early. I knew I wanted to be a nurse from, 10 or 12.
Well, and with the mother connection there, you already knew how difficult it was. I work at a couple of hospitals, and probably the hardest job in that facility is being a nurse, period. So I commend you on your choice and for the longevity. That's pretty awesome. So,
well, once a nurse, always a nurse.
I think that's true. Even the doctors who are nurses. So
yeah.
It's an amazing field. It can be very rewarding. It can also be very troubling. And one of the problems, you know, that we have to deal with in the hospitals all the time is the issue with death and dying. And you're a near-death expert. So what is a near-death experience?
Well, a near-death experience is when a person has a clinical crisis of some kind, it could be an accident or a traumatic event or combat or drowning. And then they go on to experience one or more of 15 characteristics that are universally associated with near-death experiences. Around the world, they pretty much have the same elements to near-death experience.
What are some of those elements?
Some of those elements, people will talk about being physically outside of their body, and maybe from the top of the emergency room, they're watching people try to resuscitate them. They'll talk about being in a place with a very powerful, loving light. They might talk about going through a dark space that sometimes resembles a tunnel, a sense of being in the presence of other spiritual beings, experiencing a life review, which is pretty awesome in that people sometimes will feel like they're in a panoramic situation and looking at all their different experiences when they were younger, and they're usually experiencing it from the other point of view. So if you were a bully and bullying somebody, you would experience it from the other person's point of view. That usually gets people's attention. Visiting
wow.
some place, they talk about going through the veil. Kids talk about going to heaven, whatever one chooses to call it. In this place, there's all knowledge. You can ask any questions and get answers. There are several. They actually have a scale called the Grayson scale to measure the depth of one's experience. But those are a few of the things that we talk about.
Wow. Now, working with the military and military personnel for so long, have you ever seen that near-death experience impact a military person? And what were some of the commonalities? I'm sure every one of them was different, but there's probably some general commonalities among that. And
yep.
What have you noticed?
They're actually the same as these, except in some circumstances, if they were in combat, they have told me that when they were shot and thought they were dying, they could see other spirits of the people that were with them who were also wounded. My first experience was in Vietnam, and it was 1969, so nobody actually knew what a near-death experience was.
Right.
Raymond Moody didn't coin it till 75. And this young man was he would come out of recovery from his injuries, and he asked me to please talk to him. He wanted to tell me something, but he asked me, you have to believe me. And he's crying. And he goes on to tell me about this experience he has, which embodies several of these things we now know to be classic elements of an NDE. And he was just so emotional and was such an intense experience. And unfortunately, many Vietnam vets, I ran into one at my Vietnam reunion. He was a patient who was actually treated at the facility where I worked, but before mm-hmm. I got there. And he talked about his experience, which was really a very profound, but again, had these out of other world spiritual contacts, all these experiences. And he said he tried to tell the doctors about it when he was in Vietnam and when he got to Walter Reed, because he had a head injury, nobody wanted to talk about it. And so he had never talked about it in all these years. And here we were 50 years later, he's telling me about this experience he had. And we did get him to come to the conference that IANS puts on every year and make him a speaker and let him tell his story and be surrounded with people who already know what it is, and he didn't have to be mm-hmm. afraid of being judged.
Well, do you see, you know, personality changes, you know, as people go through this and come out? And you know, I know in my case, I don't get to know a lot of the patients before they actually end up in the hospitals with me. So it's kind of hard for me to judge that. But I may be asking you something that's beyond, you know, what you see from day to day. But do you notice a personality change from any of these patients, or do they report it?
Yes. There's very distinct personality changes. And this is what is very hard for some of them, because if they don't understand them, if they haven't had somebody to validate the experience. Many of them have sensitivity to light and sound. They don't like bright lights. They don't like loud noises. They'll have some interaction with electricity, like their computers might go on and off. Can't wear watches. The batteries die. They have increased allergies and sensitivity to medication. A lot of them will actually change professions. They become very altruistic. Most will lose the fear of dying. They really become more generous and charitable. They're not so interested in material things or money anymore. It really challenges their relationships, because what the person was prior to this experience, they're going to be very different looking at love, relationships. Very difficult for married folks who might not understand it. And there's other experiences and after effects as well, but these go on for a lifetime. This is not a casual thing. They have an experience, they go on, and it takes a long time to integrate these after effects into their life, because they can become very different people.
You know, and that brings me to something that I see a lot, is post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you see that these near-death experiences help them deal with that so that they don't have those issues? Does it exacerbate their post-traumatic stress disorder? Does, you know, what? How does it impact? Do you see any commonalities?
I see hope. I believe that if we could get in touch, pre-deployment and after deployment, and give them validation of the experience, I think they could help themselves and others a great deal. I think it might even make a difference in the suicide rate. The problem is, we don't have a good way yet, and something I'm working on, to get in touch with all these veterans. The VA is not interested in this. And so we're going through some other ways. I am here in North Carolina, going through the governor's meeting to try to educate people. I went last week to a meeting, and they're talking about suicide and benefits and all of these things. And when I mentioned near-death experiences, not one of them even knew what it was. And so we have a huge gap in care, because the care that we could provide is very simple. You know, validating the experience, giving them some resources, some training of providers, lots of things that wouldn't cost a lot of money. But we've got to get in touch with these veterans and let them know they're okay. It was criminal. This poor man that I met at a reunion had waited 50 years to be able to tell his story. And when I saw him at the conference, he had two armful of NDE books that he bought at our conference, and he was crying, and he was with his wife, and he said, thank you for finally letting me validate my experience and understand it.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, you know, you mentioned suicide rates. How does near-death experience impact suicide rates?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of positive after effects, becoming more altruistic, not afraid of dying. Sometimes people get healing skills. And once they understood this, the altruistic part, the caring part, the understanding that they might have but are afraid to talk about, might help the PTSD. Unfortunately, in the VA, they throw people into a PTSD group if they try to tell them about an NDE, or they give them medications that they should not be getting because they tell them they're bipolar. So it's a total disaster when that happens. But I think if given some support and acknowledgement and affirmations about their experience, they could be able to look at things a little differently, but it's just layered on top of their physical injuries, you know, the PTSD, and then they've got this experience that nobody knows anything about and they don't know anything about it. And so it really is difficult for them, and we hope to change that in IANS by giving them some resources, being able to provide support. We're looking at putting a online group together of veterans so they would have other veterans they can talk to, because they really don't want to talk to anybody unless it's a veteran or somebody who's knowledgeable about this.
It's very difficult. Now, you mentioned, you know, these near-death experiences with military personnel. Are there specific types of near-death experiences, or not near-death experiences, certain types of injuries that put individuals, you know, into that near-death experiences? Are there certain injuries that are more common or more highly associated with near-death experiences, or is it just all, you know, death and dying type, you know, traumatic?
Well, they're probably the highest number we've seen, and we finally have some research on this by Dr. David Hupford, found that 50% or 48, close to 50% of combat veterans have NDEs. So the combat, the trauma there. But you'll also see them in children. Most children have them through near drowning incidents. We have people that have been electrocuted or just been very ill with cancer or other long-term diseases. So there are many different situations in which one could have a near-death experience. And that's important to know, because that means there's numerous places in hospitals, labor and delivery, the burn unit, the emergency room, the OR, all these places are potential places for people to have NDEs. And if people are not willing to share them, Dr. Hufford interviewed physicians, and basically he found all physicians thought that these people should be able to tell them about NDEs. But he also found that when interviewed, they said most of them would either put them on drugs or refer them to psych. So, and neither of those things are a good alternative for experiencers.
I can definitely understand that. Now, as you go through these processes, you know, you've talked about children as well as combat veterans. It sounds like, you know, there's some actual trauma. So it may, do you think this may be a reaction to post-traumatic stress type disorder, or do you think this is totally separate?
I think it's totally separate. It is not a mental illness or a psychological illness. It is a spiritual phenomena that happens during different kinds of trauma. And really, we don't know why some people have them and others don't. There aren't any variables like age or economic group or education or anything that would tell you why one group of people have or don't have an experience. And that is certainly a question I get asked a lot. We just simply don't know. But the feelings that they have afterwards are all, they don't need therapy, really. Most of them just need validation and some resources and maybe some support in helping them understand some of the after effects.
Now, as you talk with these individuals and you start, you know, sharing information with them, I know in our conversation, you've been very good about not identifying individuals, but I have issues, and I'm sure you do too, with making sure that we're keeping those individuals safe. And how does HIPAA play in with your research and your studies and your communications with other people about near-death experiences?
Well, we do have like 88 support groups around the country. And they're groups that meet once a month, and people can go to them and share and talk about it. These are not patients. These are people who are out in the community who are doing things. And it's their choice to share their experience.
Okay.
So HIPAA doesn't really get in there. If it was a patient in the hospital, that would be a different thing. Whoever talked to them certainly could not share it with other people.
Right.
I always encourage them to chart it. But it only refers to people who are in a hospital environment, and usually patients don't share it in that environment. They wait till they get home or find somebody they think they can trust and believe in prior to sharing it.
Good. Well, now you mentioned these 88 support groups. Is there a place that my listeners could go to if they wanted to join one? How would they find out about these?
You would go to the IANS.org website and then resources, and there will be a place there to look at all the different groups, where they are, and it has a contact person and, a number. Also, it's a great idea. They can go to IANS.org and join IANS for very little money, and they'll get updates on any new groups or in the IANS newsletter, and may be able to get their story in there as well. So the IANS website has numerous pages of experiencers who are sharing their experience, and resources available and where the groups are located.
Now, exactly what is that website? You say IANS.
Yes.
Is that?
Capital I, capital A, capital N, capital D, capital S .org. It stands
Excellent.
For the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And you can just also Google near-death studies. It'll come up, and also our YouTube. We have our own YouTube channels, and we have some talks there that I've done, other veterans have done, and you can get a look at how emotional some of these are. At our conferences for several years now, I've offered free entrance for veterans who are near-death experiencers. So we've had a lot of disabled veterans who come to the conference. It'll be in Seattle this year over Labor Day weekend. And so it does give people an opportunity to meet other experiencers and healthcare providers who understand it.
Well, I know as a clinical psychologist in the hospitals I work at, I get referrals from physicians all the time, and, sometimes they don't know how to quantify what they want me to do, what they want me to look at. What do you recommend for either the physicians themselves when they're making referrals to someone like me or to individuals like me? What do you recommend that I look for and how to proceed at least initially when I first meet the individual?
Well, I think you have to leave it as an open-ended question. Did anything happen to you during your deployment, your injury, your accident that was different and that you might want to talk about? And I think, you're very skilled at that. They want to talk about it. They just are looking for some trusting people.
Right.
The physicians don't know a lot about it, and we have a few that have had experiences and have written books like Eben Alexander, Proof of Heaven. We have other physicians who have written about it, which makes it hopefully one day we'll make an entree into the physician group. But psychologists and even nurses, these people believe them for the most part, but they don't get good education in their programs. And so that's, I've done a lot of education at universities, organizations, in the military. I taught it all the time. So I think you use kind of a traditional open-ended support and just listen. For the most part, they want to tell their story. They want somebody to believe them. They want resources, maybe, and they aren't looking for an interpretation usually. They just want somebody to understand that they had this phenomenal experience and let them know they're not crazy.
Well, that's very important. And, you know, I'm in a position, you know, when I go in there, I have to give some kind of diagnosis or I basically don't have access to continue seeing and working with them while they're in the hospital. And it sounds like to me that if people don't understand what's going on, that they may misdiagnose. You mentioned bipolar before.
Yeah.
And to me, it sounds more like the better type of diagnosis would be something like an adjustment disorder because, you know, it's a temporary type of diagnosis, but it's also kind of what's happening. They're having to adjust to their experience that they just had, this new life-changing reality that they faced when they died or got close to death. And what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that's true. We know how the bureaucracies work. You've got to, everybody
right.
wants you to have some kind of label. The other coding systems that we've looked at are spiritual emergencies, adjustment disorder, I think would work. Anything that doesn't imply that they have a mental illness, because that simply isn't true. They are just adjusting to this new person that they are. And, I mean, there are things that change in their life a great deal, and many of them change professions after they've had this experience. So they'll look for more altruistic professions a lot, become chaplains or hospice workers or things that they just can't tolerate anymore. They can't stand any kind of violence. So I've seen hospital administrators who have had an NDE, and he used to be a great boxing fan, and he couldn't even watch the matches anymore because it's just too violent. So, you know, there are many things that affect them that will change the things that they do for entertainment, how they relate to their family, and all kinds of things. In addition, they might get some skills. Some experiencers go on to have healing ability or increased intuitive ability. So that adds another dimension that people would have to help them adjust to, that it's okay. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong. It's just something else that you might have been given as a gift.
Do you think the near-death experience actually changes their brain physically, or do you think it's a biochemical process on top of the spirituality change, or is it all just purely that spiritual side that you talked about?
Well, I think one of the things that we've found out over the last few years is because many of these people have actually died and then had an experience and then eventually were brought back to life, that this doesn't have to be something that happens in the brain. It can happen outside of the brain. So there's the spiritual part of it. I think that, you know, there's many things that they have to adjust to with this. And so I think we have to look at it in a broader way. There's so many things we don't understand about consciousness. And right now there's a lot of research going on with that because the near-death experience has left us with many people who have had very interesting experiences. I'm particularly interested in the veterans and children because I don't think they have good advocates, and they desperately need them. Children go 50 years. They try to tell their parents once. If they don't believe them, they're not going to talk about it again. And These are kids that are going to be different, that will need somebody to advocate for them. So it is a long-term difference.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Here's a question you may not want to answer, but my question to you is, have you experienced a near-death experience personally?
Well, I represent a group of people that, and I've recently only understood this in the last several years. I believe I had an experience as a child when I was about four. I almost bled to death having my tonsils out. And over the years, I've watched, and I have many of the after effects, but I never really put them together with that incident until actually some folks who have some ability to look at these things said, absolutely, this is an experience you have. So I would say, yes, I am an experiencer, didn't understand it myself for many years, and that is an issue for people. You have to follow back the after effects to a critical crisis, and then maybe you can put the story together.
Well, what advice, where should a mental health professional like myself, maybe even a graduate school professor who's training graduate students to become mental health professionals, what recommendations do you have for them? Where should they go to get information? And is it something they should incorporate into their daily practice?
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think that you'll be able to recognize them because you can ask if they've had some kind of trauma, accident, illness, and you can ask if they had any effects from that they recognize. I think IAN's webpage is, we have a huge amount of material there. You could call me directly and ask things if we have veterans that want to talk. We also have a sister organization called ASSIST, and there would be on the ASSIST, I think it's ASSIST.org, and they actually train therapists, counselors. They have a weekend course to take that specializes in dealing with people who have NDEs. But most of the issues really are just being open, supportive, and learning from the patients. The patients have been my best teachers.
Okay. Well, and I you know, looking at IAMS, the International Association for Near Death Studies, you know, they have lots of resources all over the webpage, and it's a good source, and I would recommend people start there. You know, they have, you know, how to tell your healthcare provider that you think you've had a near-death experience, that sort of thing. And I think that's a good place to start. Also, you said, you know, people could call you if you needed to. Are you willing to to give that out? And do you have an email address that you could give out to my listeners as we kind of wrap this up?
Sure. D. Corcoran. CORCORAN 1946 at gmail.com. Again, D. Corcoran 1946 at gmail.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on our show. If you got one thing you wish people to hear in this presentation today, what would it be? And I'll leave that for you to close.
It would be that my wish would be that they can find a professional person who can help support them. If not, come to IANS. We are the home of the NDE. And come to one of our conferences. Our conferences are fabulous for new experiencers. The next one is Labor Day weekend in Seattle, and that'll be on our webpage, all the details of that, and eventually you'll be able to sign up for it. But it's an amazing information, and over the years I have learned so much from different people who have had NDEs and then acquired different skills and understanding, and that we're here. IANS is here for everybody, not just veterans and parents of children, but we're here to provide support, information, education, to groups that would like to learn more about NDEs, and I'm happy to do that. Just spread the word is the most important thing.
That is true, and thank you very much for coming on and helping us try to fight some of the stigma associated with being human, and I want to give you an opportunity, if you ever like to come back on, to please let us know. And that basically concludes our show today. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And remember to follow us on mainstreammentalhealth.org. Share with your friends and family. And follow us on the Mental Health News Radio Network. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans. So buckle up.
Great, great idea. Everything in the universe is subject to change, right?
Exactly.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. No worries. I think, you know, I see a lot of patients that die and come back. And, you know, I've as a psychologist, I never thought I would ever experience anything like that, you know, because I'm not a medical doctor. But I go in the hospitals. I've had patients crash right in front of me, and they bring them back to life. And 10 minutes later, they're talking to me like nothing had happened, you know.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
It's very interesting. And most patients do not want to tell their doctor about it because they're afraid of being judged. So you're more likely to get somebody to talk to you. And the first person that somebody comes in touch with is just critical to how they're going to integrate this experience.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on, and
you're welcome.
You know, if you feel a need, you got something you want to share, please contact Ryan or Mark, and we'll see about getting you back on.
Okay, and if you have any questions or need to ask questions about this with patients or clients, please feel free to give me a call or an email. I'm happy to work with you.
Excellent. And you know, while we're talking, I'm going all over your website here. This thing is pretty inclusive, I think. I haven't seen very many websites that every time I'm thinking of a question, I click and there's the answer right there. I mean, you guys are pretty thorough. So
there's a lot of information there.
There is. It's almost overwhelming, but I think as individuals have experiences, they, you know, like you do the terminal ill or that type of stuff, or children, parents, and there's all these questions that it's like, wait, it's right there.
Yeah.
You guys
there's
have done a good job. Thank you.
Yeah, flyers there on different people, different things, different experiences. And the YouTube channel has a lot, too. They should go and look under near-death experiences. We have a lot of talks on that channel.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. And, again, thanks for coming on and spending time with me today.
Anytime. It was nice to be able to do it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram @ Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter @ Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.